I had pushed math on him at the normal age, it wouldn't have worked. It was just too difficult for him in the beginning, and there wasn't much interest.
Welcome to Radio Free School.
My name is Martin Demain, and I was involved in homeschool with my son. I became a single parent when he was 2 years old. Homeschool seemed to work quite well for us. We've traveled a lot together and learned a lot together and explored a lot in life together. Currently, I am a researcher at MIT in theoretical computer science. Half-time and the other half-time, I'm an artist in residence. Also at MIT, and my son is a professor in computer science at MIT, and so we still get to collaborate and work and hang out together at times. My personal art is mostly directed working in glass and certain sculptures. I'm developing a concept of something like open source art. There's an open source concept in computer science where it's the final project that's more important than the people who work on it. So it's very much not involved with ego, which is a different kind of, which is not normal for art. And so I'm working on larger concepts, working with students, trying to get them involved in using their imagination and creativity. And it seems to have some interesting effects.
How does that translate into an actual environment or whatever?
Well, one way to explain it would be to give a couple of examples. One of the first examples that seemed to work well is I was asked to come up with an idea that would create a little bit of controversy in the library. At schools today, very few people are going to libraries, especially in a technical school. All the papers you need to read are more electronic, and you need to be really up to date, and it's hard for libraries to attract students to come to the library to use their resources. So they're becoming less and less important, especially in technical schools. So the idea I came up with was, one of the ideas was to build an armchair out of textbooks that were written by MIT authors. And so these books would be bolted, cut, and glued, and joined together in interesting ways. And the arms of the armchair would be books that you could open and read. But as another comment, the chair would be designed so that when you sat down, books would close shut. So you couldn't read them while sitting down in the chair. So the statements were that you couldn't be comfortable reading these books except by standing up, and that books were better made for furniture. So I proposed this, and the first comment I got was, can you teach a class on how to build furniture out of books? What I thought was kind of humorous and something that would create controversy. Turns out that people are interested in most anything if it's presented in kind of an interesting way. So their interest, I didn't know for at the beginning, was because many books are destroyed. There's a huge amount of books here that go to landfill every year, and they showed me an article later that of books that had been dug up 30 years later from a landfill, and that the books were still readable. They hadn't decomposed at all. Books don't recycle easily because you have to chop the bindings off and remove the covers because there's glue and cardboard and other materials involved in the covers. And so they're called choppers, actually, another technical word, to recycle these books. And I think the closest one to Boston is in New Jersey. So generally, books are not recycled because the cost of moving them around to a recycler tends to be too expensive. So they were hopeful that this class would also, in a subtle way, call attention to recycling issues with books. So I went around. This would be the first class I taught at MIT. My son was involved. We got a structural engineer, an artist from the visual arts department, someone from library science, and a cabinet maker. All these people were resource people to teach a class on how to build furniture out of books. And with the students, we built a bedroom. This was a class that the students could choose to have for credit if they want. It turned out to be a lot of fun. The exhibit went up. There's some pictures on the website. The exhibit drew so many people that it was in the library that it was in the architecture library, that it was extended for a second month. And then after that, it moved to the Boston Public Library for 2 months. And then it seemed like it was time to move on to new projects. So that was kind of a group project that was kind of the first one that seemed to be kind of positive and show how interesting and easily it was to get students to do creative things here.
What was your approach to home education, though? Was it more unstructured, or was it like, letting your child lead?
So I did some unusual things. In the beginning, I was, I think like most people doing homeschooling, to develop a program at home, to become concerned about teaching balanced material. And so I got a program that I started with that we used for about a year, and then I realized that it wasn't that important, that you can use almost any kind of focus to teach a balance, that you shouldn't worry. For me, it seemed important that the balance was generally not correct for students, I thought, that each student has their own kind of speed for learning different kinds of things, that in my son's case, that if I had pushed math on him at the normal age, it wouldn't have worked. Mm-hmm. It was just too difficult for him in the beginning, and there wasn't much interest. Things like times tables weren't really done till he was about 10 years old, somewhere between 9 and 10. And now he's essentially a strong mathematician, I think, mostly by letting the student proceed at their own level. So my main focus was making things interesting, making learning creative, an important part of life, and fun. One major unusual thing that I did is that Eric would go to school for a week or two, public school a week or two every year, to make sure that it was his decision and not mine to do homeschool. And the agreement I had, because I don't like to repeat things, is that homeschooling went right through the year. It was 12 months a year, and it was approximately about an hour a day. So if we did homeschool, it would run through the summer. My studies of school is that the average learning was about 45 minutes to an hour a day of the topics that I was interested in, and that they would spend 2 to 3 months repeating things come September again. I get bored very easily, so it seemed more interesting to present new material. So Eric certainly thrived on homeschool and eventually led his own project. He developed an early interest with computers, so we used computers to teach most anything. A lot of his writing in the beginning came from developing early adventure games, where he had to write clever stories that had interesting twists and so on. I just thought of one interesting project that he did. In addition to doing a newspaper that had to be distributed in the area, he did a radio show himself. I thought it was important that he experience some theater. And the play that he performed twice. Once was for children and once was for adults. So there were sound effects. There were four people in the play doing different voices and sound effects. And the children could watch. and see how the sound effects were done. And he didn't allow the adults to watch it all. They had to listen as if it truly was a radio show. They had this more interesting mystery of they couldn't anticipate what was going to happen next. That worked well.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I'm Noam Chomsky. You're listening to Radio Free School on CFMU 93.3.
It's interesting that you definitely were able to draw out your child's interests, and as opposed to just maybe imposing your own program, like, would you say?
Yes. So my role was to expose him to many different things to get him to explore other interests.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to work best.
Was it obvious to you that he had that interest in math, an early interest? I mean, you said that he wasn't, and I'm not talking about arithmetic and computation, things like that, but did you notice any kind of special understanding that you were able to help him develop or something?
None.
Mm-hmm. And how did you both get into paper folding and solving so many deep, complex problems? How did that interest get sparked?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, that's the one that creates the most public attention, probably because it's the most easiest to understand.
And because it's beautiful as well.
Yeah, it's one of many interests. And so I think, I mean, there's lots of things that Eric and I have done. I think when it's time for a student to do research in graduate school, you have to find topics. Eric was pretty much given free rein to work on anything he wanted as a graduate student, mm-hmm. which was how he had been kind of raised in an educational system. So people were very supportive in that way of not imposing what they thought what was best. And when we looked at paper folding, we saw the beauty. We also recognized that it was an area that hadn't been studied scientifically very much. And so it turns out that it was the right time to work on that. And so Eric was involved in some very early results, mathematics and paper folding. And that's led to working on deeper problems using folding techniques for understanding how proteins fold, for example.
Did you include him in your work when you went home educating? When you weren't sitting there all day home educating. So was he able to come and be part of your work? And
yeah, I guess the earliest thing we did together is we had an Eric and Dad puzzle company where he would design puzzles and I would make them and perhaps modify them in difficulty a little bit and mm-hmm. market them. So, yeah, I think he's always been invited to join in whatever I did. I was fortunate to primarily work at home almost always.
And where was home, anyway?
We traveled a lot. I think that the traveling worked well as an important part of this education.
Mm-hmm. Was this in Canada, though, that you traveled a lot?
Mostly in Canada and the States.
Okay.
Mostly on the East Coast.
What other things did you do together? Did you enjoy books together as well?
The first books that interested Eric were science fiction books. And I think that was perfect because it helped stimulate his imagination. My philosophy was that if you can think of something, then it's possible. The hard part is not to do something, but to think of something. And so everything we read in science fiction books, in some sense, we believed could be done. An example of that would be, there was a time travelers conference at MIT, and Eric was asked to speak at that. And he thought about it for a while, and he realized that one of his papers that he wrote in computer science could be interpreted as time travel. And so he gave a talk at the Time Travelers Convention that he really enjoyed, and the people there really enjoyed, proving that you should be able to go back in time quickly, but to move forward in time, you can only do it in real time, the time we experience now, that you can't do it fast. And that theory seems to have some strong possibilities. There's actually two professors here that in physics that do study time travel. They disagree on some levels, but they certainly welcome this new theory. Yeah, I recommend books that spark the imagination.
University at 12, was it a good thing?
I certainly wasn't in favor of it. It became more of a political protest, we became very much involved in children's rights. It was a school that did not allow students to enter school before 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that had been the tradition there. He had become, at that time, interested in computer graphics and wanted to sit in a class audited. He wasn't particularly interested in being a student there to learn more about doing graphics on a computer. They said no. So they actually had never met him or interviewed him and eventually required him to take two classes, and if he got a B or better, they would let him audit this graphics class.
What university was that?
Dalhousie University. So we both thought it was important that other children should have more access to university classes if it seemed appropriate. He became qualified as a student, which allowed him to audit this class. And when he finally got notice for this, he said to me, well, if I'm qualified to be a student, then I'm going to school. And so it happened by accident.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly couldn't say no.
The experience, would you say, was it good?
I think it was great. I think he was an aggressive learner, and it turned out to be the right thing at the right time. I think as a parent, I felt my job at that time was to try and distract him more. I didn't feel there was a rush in going through school, but it was pretty hard to slow him down. So mm-hmm. He finished his undergraduate degree in 2 years.
It's really amazing. So I just have one final question. Is it important to you and to maybe even Eric that people be well-rounded?
The definition of well-rounded can be abused. I think what's important is that people are open to all ideas, that they're not judgmental, that they're not age-centric, that they're good listeners, and they're willing to explore alternative approaches to solving problems. I think they should be exposed to lots of things. They should not. Often being well-rounded, if you're not well-rounded, implies that you have tunnel vision, that you only can view certain approaches to solving problems. And I think that's often the problem within public schools, is that you're told this is the one way to study and learn. I think it's important to do things physically, to do things mentally. I see nothing wrong, though, with an educational approach being very focused on one thing, provided you get to use that one thing in all aspects. So for Eric's case, it was computer science. We were able to use that to study history, to do writing, to work with mathematics and other kinds of science in very interesting ways.
My children, they're very musical, and we tend to do that with music.
Uh-huh. You know? Yes, music is an incredible window to learning.
Parting words.
Just that learning is fun, and it's okay not to know what you want to do in the future. I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. Maybe that means I'm never going to grow up. Where are you located?
Do you know Hamilton?
Yes. Hamilton's just south of Toronto, maybe
mm-hmm.
an hour south. Is that about
right?
Yeah. And is that the one that has a hospital in it that has unusual walls on the first floor?
That's McMaster University, right?
Right. So I remember getting kind of arrested there.
Oh, what for? How come?
Well, I was at the hospital, and hospital gift store bought a camera, went out and started taking pictures of the walls, and I was stopped.
Oh.
they're worried about a paparazzi-type thing of people taking photographs of people in the hospital.
Yeah. So you actually carted off to jail, eh?
Not quite, but kept in an office and questioned for over an hour. And they did not believe that anyone would take pictures of the walls because they could not believe that anyone could find them interesting.
Well, you're allowed to get your camera back.
Yes, if I promise not to take any more pictures.
Radio Free School, a show by, for, and about home learners.
Let's talk about what math is.
Well, I just think it's pretty much something that works towards other things, like a theory or an idea. I just love math a lot. It's really fun.
So, like, what is math for then?
To express an idea, perhaps, or think.
I mean, you use math every day, right?
Yes, I use math when I play piano or when I go into a store and I need to figure out how much money I have, how much I need to buy something. I use it pretty much all the time.
Right, so what kind of math do you do then? Do you think of your own math problems, your own math ideas?
Some of the time. So, for example, I like the Fibonacci sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do enjoy algebra more than anything. It's my favorite kind of math. So it's kind of just fun.
Okay, first of all, what is Fibonacci sequence theory?
It's like a pattern of nature, pretty much.
Pattern found in nature?
Yes. The first part is 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8, 13, and so on. And the thing is, it goes by the idea of adding the last two numbers. So 1 plus 0 is 1. 1 plus 1 is 2. 1 plus 2 is 3. 2 plus 3 is 5, and so on. Algebra? I just like to figure out the problems of algebra because it's really neat. You're just studying and you have to figure out what something is, but you don't know. You know the answer, but you only know a little bit of the question. You have to figure out how much you have. So if you say, if you're in a store, you pay $5 and they give you $3 in change, but you don't know how much the thing's worth. Let's say you figure it out. Provided that the clerk's honest.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of like an investigation, right?
Yes, exactly.
Like yeah.
You can use it as a code, even. Mm-hmm. It's pretty neat.
Do you make up your own algebra problems?
Yes, a lot. I think things are over a lot, but mm-hmm. I don't do things with words as much. I don't visualize them. I can do them in my head, but I don't visualize them in pictures or anything. Mm-hmm. I just see the numbers.
What kind of math do you want to do more of?
Probably just more algebra. Algebra is my favorite kind.
Okay.
But I might like to do things like calculus, even though I did not exactly enjoy calculus last time I did it. Yeah, I'm interested in being able to do higher maths. Going on with that.
What would you like to do with math in the future?
Well, I'd probably like to do a lot of science. I like science.
Hi, my name's Brahman, and I'm going to be talking about math, what I think math is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think math is everything.
You think it's in everything or it is everything? Or both?
Both. Everything, like if you move something on the floor or something, then like if the floor has squares or something, it takes how many centimeters does it move?
Mm-hmm.
And when you count something and something has like things sticking out on it,
mm-hmm.
yeah, you can count that, that's math.
What kind of games do you play that you think are mathematical games?
Well, chess is a math, like, because you have to think, mm-hmm. and then you have to strategize things, so that's math. Mm-hmm. And when I'm drawing pictures, well, sometimes I have to measure how tall I want my person to be, or how tall I want the house to be, how tall I want the tree to be, so that's mm-hmm. math too. I think everything is math.
Mm-hmm. So it's just really part of your life, right? You don't think of it as something separate? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Telling time is math.
Mm-hmm. Measuring, right? Measuring time.
Yeah. And measuring. Cooking is math, because you have to measure how much stuff you have in a measuring cup and stuff. And counting is math. Yes. Say someone had lots of things on it and an account. That's math too.
What other math things do you do your own? Remember you told me you do your own math, right?
Yeah.
Like what?
I'm talking about that.
Okay.
Hi.
Hello. What's math to you?
Well, math was to me a great pain in the butt when I was in school. I had trouble with math. In grade 9, I had to drop a music class, which I wasn't very good at anyway. I was trying to play the French horn. But to take math clinic, which was very good. It helped me focus, and I found it very... basically, math was a lot of repetition and memory work, and of stuff I didn't really seem to understand why. And also, with math, I only ended up with grade 10 math, which is the bare minimum you need. By grade 11, I had hit a wall that I couldn't see through at all, that I couldn't see any way around except raising my hand and asking to be excused to go to the bathroom and then not returning to the class for that rest of the class sometimes. Just because it was so, it seemed so annoyingly bereft of any use, right? Mm-hmm. So that I didn't understand. It wasn't exciting, let's put it that way. Many, many years later, I think math is very exciting in its theoretical, like this discussion around mathematics is fascinating and exciting, and I guess my conclusion would be I concur with Professor Higginson, who we've had on the show before, that it's the way it's taught often, it is boring and seems devoid of any interest or real use, or doesn't capture your imagination. And I found high school sort of trying at best, you know, usually, and math was sort of one of those sinkholes of despair that I didn't look forward to at all.
Okay, and now two puzzles read by Madeline from the book A Mathematical Journey in Code by Sarah Flannery.
It goes like this. A farmer on his way home with a fox, a goose, and a sheaf of oats comes to a narrow wooden bridge that can support only the weight of the farmer and one of his charges. If the farmer leaves the fox alone with the goose while he carries the sheaf of oats across the bridge, the fox will eat the goose. If he brings the fox across and leaves the goose alone with the sheaf of oats, the goose will eat the oats. So how does the farmer get himself, the fox, the goose, and the sheaf of oats safely to the other side? Okay, the two jars puzzle. Given a 5-liter jar and a 3-liter jar and an unlimited supply of water, how do you measure out 4 liters exactly?
The end!
I'm gonna wrap myself in paper, I'm gonna daub myself with glue, stick some stamps on the top of my head, I'm gonna mail myself to you.
Contact Radio Free School at grassroots@hwcn.org or mail P.O. Box 19, 1280 Main Street West, Hamilton, Ontario, Canada, L8S1CO.